Well, good morning, good life. It's so good to be with you. And you may recognize this spot. It was about 12 months ago that I shared on the idea of Sabbath and started to talk around what that looked like in the journey and the context, I guess, of my life at the time. And I wanted to come back again today because we're going to have a relook at Sabbath, but also in a little bit different context. Now, if I'm completely honest with you, I had great ambitions of starting to enact Sabbath in my life and putting things in place and, you know, changing the way I do it. But I don't know that I actually have. I pretty much have just continued to live like I normally would and not held to the things that I thought were important. The idea of Sabbath came out of a book that I was reading by John Mark Comer, The Relentless Pursuit of Hurry. And he talks around these four key areas where we can start to practice Sabbath. But we're going to take a little bit of a look at that today, and I'm going to recap some of the things I talked about 12 months ago. But I also want to talk in a little bit of context around storms and the storms that we may face in life. So I've called today's message Sabbath Through the Storm. And I'm convinced that all of us are going to face storms, and all of us are going to have these moments in our lives where we have to navigate them. I love a quote that I shared last time I spoke by Walter Brueggemann. He's an American theologian, and he said this: "Those who keep the Sabbath live all 7 days differently." I believe there's something significant about this, because when we practice that Sabbath, it should actually change the other 7 days we live. And it's also about living each of those 7 days in the spirit of Sabbath. I remember a moment really clearly. I was 17 years of age, and I just left the Sunshine Coast and headed to Bourke in Western New South Wales. And I was attending Cornerstone Bible College. I was sitting on the deck of my accommodation, surrounded by the red dust and salt bush. And I was engaged in a massive debate with one of the lecturers. My lecturer had a view, or the way I interpreted his view, was that life wasn't meant to be easy. I had a very different plan. I had a very different view. I believed that life was meant to be fun, it was meant to be enjoyable, we were meant to get the most out of it. And as a good Bible college student, recounted scriptures like, you know, Jesus came that we may have life and have a life to the full. But what I failed to do was read the scriptures that actually maybe didn't support my worldview. Scriptures where, like in James, where it tells us to consider it pure joy when we, you know, face challenges and tests of any kind. And then with Jesus himself, you know, in John chapter 16 says, "Here on earth you'll have many trials and sorrows, but take heart, because I have overcome the world." Suffice to say, as I've got older and hopefully more wiser, I've realized that storms and trials and battles are actually part of life, just as Jesus told us and his disciples that they would be. And as I've started to learn to navigate those, I realize that maybe as I get older also, some of those battles actually get bigger, maybe a bit more intense and even more significant. There's a story in the Gospels where Jesus talks to this idea of storms, and it caught my attention because there's a few things in it that really stood out. Now, to give you a little bit of context, this story is just after one of the great miracles of the Bible where Jesus has fed the 5,000. Let me read to you from Mark chapter 6, verse 45 to 52. "Immediately after this," and this being the feeding of the 5,000, "Jesus insisted that his disciples get back into the boat and head across the lake to Bethsaida, while he sent the people home. And after telling everyone goodbye, he went into the hills by himself to pray. Late at night, the disciples were in the boat in the middle of the lake, and Jesus was alone on the land. And he saw that they were in serious trouble. Rowing hard and struggling against the wind and the waves, about 3 o'clock in the morning, Jesus came towards them, walking on water. He intended to go past them, but when they saw him walking on water, they cried out in terror, thinking he was a ghost. They were all afraid when they saw him, but Jesus spoke to them at once. 'Don't be afraid,' he said. 'Take courage, I'm here.' Then he climbed into the boat and the wind stopped, and they were totally amazed, for they did not understand the significance of the miracles of the loaves. Their hearts were too hard to take it in." There are a few things in this story that caught my attention. The first of those is that Jesus insisted the disciples get in the boat. Now, we're talking about the creator of the universe here. it wouldn't have caught Jesus by surprise that a storm was about to hit. It wasn't like, oh wow, this storm just popped up out of nowhere. Jesus is all-knowing. He knows all things. And the fact that he insisted that his disciples get into the boat, knowing full well what they're about to face, I believe speaks to the heart of God in so many ways. It talks to the insistence he has on our growth and our development and becoming more like him, despite the circumstances that we may face. You see, Jesus may not cause the storms in our lives, but he can certainly use them. He can use them to shape us and mold us. And I, for one, am so thankful for that insistence of God, of that work of the Spirit in our lives that continues to shape and mold us. The other thing that jumped out at me was this idea that they were in serious trouble. Now, we're going to navigate storms, and there are going to be times in our lives that feel like we're in serious trouble. Or in actual fact, we may well be in serious trouble. Now, what often happens in these storms is that they're marked with uncertainty. We're unsure of what the next step may look like. We're unsure of, you know, how it's ever going to end. We're unsure if we're actually even going to get through this storm. The thing that I find really interesting in this story is that four, maybe even six of the disciples that were in this boat were actually career seasoned fishermen. Being on the water wasn't anything, you know, new or unfamiliar to them. They knew what can happen on this lake. They probably faced storms like this before. But we see in this situation where, again, they started to be gripped by fear. They started to forget the things that they knew. And that's what happens so often in storms in our own lives. We fail to remember the things that we actually know. We fail to remember that actually we've been through these things before and we came out it okay. And we focus on maybe where the potential end could be, as opposed to, okay, what's the next step I need to take? And we forget that God is good, that God is faithful, that the storm will pass, that the boat won't sink. So when these seasons of uncertainty come along, we've got to align our thinking to the things that we know to be true and good and right in these circumstances we find ourselves in. Then we read this really interesting part where it says that he intended to go past them. Jesus wasn't even intending to stop when he saw that they were in trouble. He intended to go past them. Now, there's a whole bunch of differing reasons why this, and as I had a look at some of the study on it, there's a whole host of different opinions on why Jesus actually intended to pass them by and why he even went out in the first place. You know, was it just to reveal his glory so that they could see who he was and remember that it was Jesus who had just fed the 5,000 and was that source of provision for them, and again, he'll be that source of getting them through the storm? Was it so that they would call out to him and recognize their need for help? Now, maybe both of those things, or it could be a whole lot of other reasons why, and I'm probably not the best guy to actually dive in and, you know, exegesis that for you. But whatever the fact is, what I know to be true is that when we're facing a storm, we need to keep our eyes fixed on Jesus. When Jesus is at the center of all that we're walking through, when he is at the center of our lives, it is then that we find ourselves in the position to be able to get through the storm, because he is at work in our lives through that. Then there's the words of Jesus. It's the only words that he spoke in that moment after he came out on the water. And it's where he said this: "Don't be afraid. Take courage. I am here." Do you need to hear those words of Jesus into the storms that you might be walking through in your life today? Do you need to hear those words to encourage you to keep going, to keep walking in the fullness of all that he's called you to and get you to the other side? If that's the case today, I want those words to ring true, just as they did for the disciples on that lake thousands of years ago. They are true for us here today. Take courage. Don't be afraid. He is here. So how does Sabbath fit into this story? Well, if it was the presence of God that calmed the storm in the story about the disciples, then I know that I need and desire that presence of God in my own life. If it's the presence of God that gives courage to walk through the storms, if it's the presence of God that brings peace in the midst of anything that we may be facing, then that presence needs to be indwelling and part of our life. And that's where Sabbath comes into it. Because I believe the practice of Sabbath is what creates the environment for His presence in our lives. It creates that space where our eyes can be fixed on Him no matter what is going on around us. I love this quote by John Eldridge. John Eldridge is an author. Some of you may know his book, Wild at Heart. He's recently just done a new book called Resilient, Restoring Your Weary Soul in Turbulent Times. And he says this, "To live in this hour is without quiet. If you begin to cultivate quiet in your life, you will find God." Let me just read that again. "To live in this hour is to live without quiet. But if you begin to cultivate quiet in your life, you will find God." We are created to be filled with the living God. We need this experience, this infilling of God in our lives. We need this union of Christ within us. So when the storms come, Christ is at the center of our very being and will get us through those. Now, there's a couple of scriptures that speak to that that I just want to read for you today. They're great verses. The first one is in Ephesians 3:16. It says, "I pray that from His glorious, unlimited resource, He will empower you with inner strength through His Spirit." See, it's when the Spirit is dwelled within us, we have access to this unlimited resource to navigate all that life throws our way, to not just survive the storms, but to actually thrive through them and to become better people at the end of them. And then in John 15:5, and we've talked about this verse before as a community as well, it's where we talk here about the vine and the branches. And He says, "I am the vine and you are the branches. As you live in union with Me as your source, faithfulness will stream from within you. But when you live separate from Me, you are powerless." We need the presence of God in our lives. We need that union with Jesus and the Holy Spirit dwelling in us to navigate all that life throws at us and comes our way. So just a quick refresher. As we looked at, as I talked about last year, this idea of Sabbath. And as I said at the start, John Mark Comer talks around these four ideas and practices of Sabbath. So what I want to do is do a quick summary of those four things and then think about how they apply to this idea of Sabbathing through the storm. The first one is to Sabbath is to stop. To stop working. And that's not just stop doing the paid work. Stop doing the work we do when we get home on the weekends, the chores we need to do, the jobs we didn't do during the week. It's to stop thinking about work. To Sabbath is to stop worrying. It's to stop wanting. We're in this constant state of always wanting more, of wanting this and wanting that. The second one, to Sabbath, is to rest. What does it look like to sleep? To find rest. We're in this society where sleep is just on this downhill, so many of us are deprived of the sleep that we need. What's it look like to rest, to lie around, to take a gentle stroll, to avoid heavy conversation? The Jewish people avoid intercessory prayer on the Sabbath because it's so intense. You see, we need physical, we need emotional, we need mental rest. We rest in the Father and hand everything over to Him. To Sabbath is to delight, to feast, to party, to celebrate, to eat good food, to drink nice wine. It's easy to think of Sabbath in the negative sense, around the things we need to strip away. But what does it look like to come with a view of Sabbath that it's about the things that we've been blessed with, to praise? It's a happy day, it's a celebration day, to celebrate the goodness of God and all that He has done in our lives. Mark Comer asks this question. He says, "What could I do today that fills my soul with delight?" How do we delight in all that God has done in our lives? And finally, to Sabbath is to worship, to sing, to praise, to pray, to worship, to take a walk. And this is why Sunday is such a great day to come together and Sabbath together in corporate worship. But that doesn't work for everybody. Not everyone can be at a gathering on any given Sunday. But to praise and to worship, they're things that we can do on our own. And it doesn't have to be a Sunday thing. It can be an every day of the week thing. What are the biggest areas in our lives that are most different to the way Jesus lives? This is a question Mark Comer asks. What are these areas in our lives that are the most different to the way Jesus lived? You know, even in the story that we read earlier about the disciples, Jesus had just finished his day and performed the miracle of feeding the 5,000. After he had said goodbye, what did he do? He went away by himself and he prayed. He knew what it was to take rest and to Sabbath, because he knew the benefits of doing that in terms of restoring of what he had put out, but also preparing for what was to come. Okay, so we're going to take a few moments now, and I'm going to get you to do a bit of work. I want you to start to get your brains thinking and put some thoughts down on paper. So either grab your device or grab a piece of paper, and we're going to take a few moments to jot some things down. The first thing I want you to do is just to create four columns. One for stopping, one for resting, one for delighting, and one for worshiping. And what I'm going to get you to do is write a whole bunch of ideas under each of those categories. Now, I'm only going to give you 90 seconds to do this. So this is not necessarily a quality game. It's definitely about quantity. I want you to just write down as many things you can think under the stop, the rest, delight, and worship category. Okay, does that make sense? So you got 90 seconds, and just make this big long list of as many thoughts you can in each one of those. What it would look like for you to practice Sabbath, and how you could be intentional in that, in practicing it. Okay, now that you've got your big list, I'm going to give you another 30 seconds. And this time what I want you to do is to circle just one item in each of those lists. So one item in stop, one item in rest, one in delight, and one in worship. To circle one. Off you go, you've got 30 seconds. Okay, so now you've got your list there with four circled items on it. The four things that you want to be intentional, that you want to be, you start to practice when it comes to Sabbath. Now there's one more step in this, and this one, you've got 15 seconds. You've got 15 seconds to choose just one, and this will become your just one thing when it comes to Sabbath, all right? So off you go, 15 seconds, choose one. So now you've got your just one. So here's the plan. Next Sunday, and this may rock a few of you, but next Sunday, the 25th of September, we won't be gathering as we normally would. Now for you guys online, it's going to be a little bit different as well. But our physical gathering, we're giving everyone a week off. But it's not just a week off, it's a week off to practice Sabbath, to be intentional about it. And I want to invite you guys online to do the same thing, to be intentional around how you practice Sabbath next Sunday. And you just grab that one thing. I don't want to make this complicated. I don't want you to be overwhelmed by it and don't feel like, hey, this whole day I've got to do the Sabbath thing. Just choose your one thing. We take small steps together, and we take small steps again the following week and the following week. And before we know it, we start ingraining this principle of Sabbath into our lives and changing how we live every day of our lives. So next Sunday, what does it look like for you to practice Sabbath? What does it look like, even for those of you with family or even particularly young kids, what does it look like to come around the table together and start to think around Sabbath and what it might look like? Invite the children into the conversation. How powerful it would be for our kids at such a young age to have this fundamental understanding of what it means to walk in Sabbath and to make that part of our lives. So don't get overwhelmed. Just start to think around Sabbath. What does it look like to stop? To rest, to delight, and to worship. So as we come to a close, there's a word that has been floating around in my head, and it's one of those kind of ouch words. It's that word surrender. And I've been thinking around the idea of how linked surrender and Sabbath actually are. You see, if I think about my own life, often I don't embrace Sabbath because I'm not willing to surrender. I'm not willing to let go. Instead, I try and make it about my works and my ability to get things done, my strength to get through the storm, my resilience to get through the circumstance and the obstacles that I face. And I come up with this closed fist approach where I'm hanging on to everything with all my might, instead of coming with this open-handed, surrendered posture, where I'm saying, God, take everything I am, take everything that I'm walking through, I give it to you, and I just lay it down at your feet, and I choose to walk in surrender today. Surrender and Sabbath are so tightly linked. And I think if we can grab a hold of that, and if we can get that deep into our hearts, it'll make the way that we approach Sabbath so much more powerful and so much more intentional. So what does it look like to come with that spirit of surrender as we stop, as we rest, as we delight, and as we worship? I love what Louis Giglio says. If Yahweh rested on the seventh day of creation, it would be foolish of us to believe that our success depends on our continued labor. Sabbath through the storms. Not only does Sabbath provide a place where we can recover from maybe what we've been through, Sabbath also prepares us for what's to come. I'd love to finish our time together today with two scriptures, one from the Old Testament and one from the New. And as I read these, I guess my hope and prayer is they may just provide you with some encouragement. They may provide you with a source of inner strength as you reflect on these scriptures, as you navigate maybe even the storms or even the life that you're walking through at the moment. And it may not all be bad, don't get me wrong. If life is good, that's not a reason to give up on Sabbath. Again, it's preparation for what is to come. The first reading is from Isaiah 30, verse 15. It says, "This is what the Sovereign Lord, the Holy One of Israel, says. Only in returning to me and resting in me will you be saved. In quietness and confidence is your strength." And in Philippians 4, verse 6 to 9, "Don't be pulled in different directions or worried about a thing. Be saturated in prayer throughout each day, offering your faith-filled requests to God with overflowing gratitude. Tell Him every detail of your life. Then God's wonderful peace that transcends human understanding will guard your heart and mind through Jesus Christ. Keep your thoughts continually fixed on all that is authentic and real and honorable and admirable, beautiful and respectful, pure and holy, merciful and kind. And fasten your thoughts on every glorious work of God, praising Him always. Put into practice the example of all that you have heard from me or seen in my life, and the God of peace will be with you in all things." So let's embrace Sabbath. Let's embrace what it looks like to stop, to rest, to delight, and to worship. And then in the midst of that, as His presence comes and fills our being, recovering, restoring from what was, and preparing us for what's to come. May you hear those words of Jesus that he spoke to the disciples. Don't be afraid. Take courage. I'm here. God bless. Thank you.